Okay, it's 11:10. Classes on Tuesday are from 11:10 to noon. So let's get started. I saw at least one hand over there. Right. Wow, that's an advanced question. Wow. Okay, so the question was, given a list of pairs where each pair has in it an integer and a character, you want to sort the list into a list of lists? Into a list of lists, where in the first list you have all the pairs that have a 1, in the second list you have all the pairs that have a 2, and so on. So this is what's called a grouping problem, where you want to group a list into a list of lists based on some criteria. So after today, you will know, in theory, everything you need to know to write such a program. And by the end of next week, I hope you will also know, in practice, everything you need to know to write such a program. So I will add that to the examples for next week. But after today, you will have learned the key technique, recursion, that lets you do anything whatsoever that you want to do. Literally, anything. If you can do it on a computer, you can do it using recursion. That's the most famous result in computing theory. It was the beginning of computing theory just before computers were invented. Or you could say it was when computers were invented. This was Turing's first paper, basically proved this. How many people have heard of Turing? Good. This person is not Turing, but he wants to speak to you for a moment.
Looks like you guys are pretty onto it. It's really good. Guys, for those of you who haven't seen me around campus either yesterday or this morning, my name is Dominic. I'm from New Zealand. I just want to tell you all quickly about a fantastic program called International Student Volunteers. Now, you guys are going to get to travel to Australia, New Zealand, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Thailand, South Africa, doing volunteer work for the first 2 weeks, guys. So you're working with children, working with animals, helping families, building houses, teaching English, working in wildlife sanctuaries. It's really, really cool. Second 2 weeks of the trip, guys, you travel all over the host country, speak the language, meet the people, eat the food, which is really, really cool. And while you're doing all of that, you get to do whitewater rafting, bungee jumping, skydiving, jet boating. I mean, you go in all these fantastic locations and landscapes, guys. It's absolutely amazing. You meet a whole bunch of really cool people. And you get to earn academic credit on the program too, if you want. The university offers it. It's really, really awesome. So, for you guys to get out there, get out of your comfort zone, go travel in the summer, it's going to be really, really awesome. I'll have these books around the class. Please take the time, fill your names and email addresses out, pass them around, guys. And I'll get back to you guys with some information about these programs, send you guys an email. Also, guys, you can take flyers at the back of those booklets and they'll tell you about the informational meetings that we're having this coming Thursday. And Jimmy, in the middle reading room, guys, is on the second floor of that building. And they're going to be on Thursday, every hour, on the hour between 9 and 5 o'clock. So come along, guys, have a listen. Get travelling this summer. It's going to be really, really awesome. So thank you very, very much for your time, Professor. And I'll see you guys all at the meeting on Thursday. Cheers.
Okay.
Oh,
right.
Just one thing quickly, I'll collect all those books up on the front table at the end.
Right. You're done now. All right, he's gone. We're safe. Right. Any more questions? Yes. I don't know. Okay. So a couple of just general administrative points before we delve into the actual content. First of all, I discovered to my great chagrin yesterday that I gave the whole lecture with my mic off. So I hope people could hear me, but I'm afraid it may not come out well on the video, so I need to remember to turn my mic on every time. Feel free at the beginning of any lecture to say, "Phil, is your mic on?" Can you hear me in the back, by the way? Does it sound like the mic is on? Yeah? Okay. It says it's on. So hopefully that's okay. You'll notice that this is lectures 4 and 5 all together in a bundle. It worked out perfectly, by the way. Yesterday we got exactly through the first half, and we'll get through the second half today. But I just wanted to mention that so that when you go to the website, if you see something that says lecture 4, That's actually lectures 4 and 5, so don't worry about that. And lecture 1 is actually lectures 1, 2, and 3. Tutorials. How many of you are now signed up for tutorials for a session you like? Anybody having a difficulty signing up? Okay, at least one person yesterday. Yes?
I signed up for the tutorial, but when I go onto the informatics website and try to view my tutorial, this message pops up saying that I don't have the permission to look at it, the tutorial.
Right. Probably you would not like it if every single person in the world could see when your tutorial was. Therefore, it's blocked so that it can only be viewed from university websites. I'm guessing that you tried to view it from somewhere outside the university network. If you're within the university network, you can view it. It's also possible if you're outside the university network to log in to the university network, but I'll leave you to look up how to do that on the web. Okay? So at least one person came to me yesterday and said, I can't go to the group I'm assigned. What do I do? And you can guess what I said. I said, go to the ITO. But it is very important, let me stress for everybody here, you really want to be attending tutorials starting this week. So the tutorial exercise is up online already. How many people have looked at it? Okay, fair number of you. How many people haven't looked yet? Are those all people with tutorials on Friday rather than Thursday? At least some of you. Okay. But depending on when your tutorial is, by this Thursday or Friday, you must have done those exercises. Right? You've got class exam coming up in 2 weeks, I think, right? For week 6. Maybe that's 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Class exam coming up in 3 weeks. You really want to be prepared for that. And this week is the crucial week. Right, the beginning of this week, we sort of knew a little bit, so we knew how to draw a chessboard if you did the lab week exercise. But the end of this week, as I said, you're going to know how to do everything a computer can do. So that's a lot to learn in 1 week. And then we'll be consolidating that knowledge and learning how to use more of it over the next couple of weeks. But it's really important not to get behind. I know that there are at least a few of you that haven't yet done the entire lab week exercise. And at this point, things are really picking up. So I just want to stress that. Don't let yourself get behind. Don't say, oh, I can make this up later. You really want to be on top of it as much as you can. Not least because, you remember I said in the first lecture, your job is to get stuck, right? Only if you've done enough of the tutorial this week to get stuck will your tutor be able to help you get unstuck. Of course, if you do get stuck, you don't need to wait for the tutor. You can be in one of the labs, ask one of the demonstrators. You can ask somebody else in this class. You can send me an email, anything like that. But your job is to get stuck as many times as you can before your tutorial, so that your tutor can then help you out. So nod like this to say, yes, Phil, that's all obvious. I know, I will work for my tutorial. You're not nodding. Okay, small nod. So seriously, get set for the tutorials, because the tutorials are, as I said before, much more important than anything that happens in lecture. Not to say the lecture is unimportant, but the tutorials are more important. Okay, any questions about that? All right, are you ready for recursion? So list comprehensions are great. This is just what we went through before. And you can do an awful lot with list comprehensions. But in fact, there's some things that you cannot do. However, using recursion, you can do everything you can do with comprehensions and more. And one reason for bringing in recursion so early is so that you can see also a different perspective on how comprehensions work. Recursion is a very small, simple mechanism. And so it's important to show it early. So there are many different recursive data structures. Natural numbers, for instance, can be described as a recursive data structure, and we will see how to do that next week. But a very good place to start is the list. So let's review a little bit about lists. Now we know about infix operators, and here are two of them. The first one is written as a colon and is pronounced cons, and the second one is written as two pluses and is pronounced append. So how many people are familiar with both of these? Quite a few people aren't. Let's just pull up actual live Haskell. And that's not what I wanted. That's what I wanted. So if you say one, cons, two, three, you get the list one, two, three. If you say list one plus two, three, you get the list one, two, three. And you can see this by looking at the types of these things. If I say two, it doesn't like me. Oh, for goodness sake, backspace doesn't work. Oh, that's a plus. Sorry, I'm not good at typing. So if we say, what's the type of cons? It says, for any type A, give me a value of type A and a list of type A, and I'll return a list of type A. And we can see that's what we had here. One is an integer, two, three is a list of integer. Similarly, if we ask, what is the type of append? It says that I had my shift key on wrong. Append takes a list of A and a list of A and returns a list of A. So we see here we had a list, the list containing just the element 1, and we added that to 2, 3. Right, if we do it the other way around, try to append the list 1, sorry, cons the list 1 with the list 2, 3, type error. If we do it the other way around and try to add just the number 1, then and it gets confused. There we go. Then we get to type error again. Okay? So that should be fairly straightforward. Now, yesterday you were asking lots of good questions about this sort of thing. Any questions about this? Is it completely obvious? Yes.
Can you put an element at the end of the list?
Can you put an element at the end of a list? So there's no easy operator like cons for putting something at the end, but of course append is symmetric. So you could just wrap it up in a unit list and then append it to the end of the list. Yes?
Are these lists in a specific order, like in an order of the size of the number? So if you write 1 plus plus 3, 2.
No, it's just the order you give it to. Right, so it's not going to sort it. It'll just be in the order given. Good point. Right, they're just in the order you give them. Yes? Is it possible to use it within a list? So do you remember the principle we learned yesterday? Do you remember the correct technical response to a language where you couldn't use cons or append within a list? I will remind you. Right, the whole class will remind you at once, right? All together now, the correct technical response to a language where you can't use an expression any place you can use any other expression is? You're not doing it. One person did it. Okay, so I'll have to teach you to all stick your tongue out at the same time. Right, but anywhere you can use an expression, you can use any other expression. So if we had a list of lists, unhappy. No, it's not unhappy. Right. Does that answer your question? of course, this is an example of forming a list of lists, partly using append. Okay, so that's append and cons. And you could do everything with append, but cons is special. Cons is how we choose to define lists. So let me... And cons is short for construct. It comes from a language called Lisp. When I first ran into cons, I thought, why is it called cons? Fortunately, I was lucky enough to be taking a class when I was an undergraduate from John McCarthy, the person who designed Lisp, so I could just go to him and say, why is it called cons? And he said, oh, it's short for construct. And I went, oh, yeah. I hadn't realized that before. Okay, so that's append and cons. So what's special about cons is just using cons and nil, we can form any other list. This wouldn't work for append, because to append things, you need a list to begin with. But for cons, we could do it just using cons and nil. So every list could be written this way. So for instance, 1, 2, 3 is 1 const on to the list 2, 3. But how do you write the list 2, 3? It's 2 const on to the list 3. How do you write the list 3? It's 3 const on to nil. Right, this is another way of understanding the difference between the list containing 3 and 3 itself. 3 itself is just 3. The list containing 3 is 3 const on to nil. I'll even show that one, just to be clear. Right. 3 const on to nil is, the list containing 3. Yes?
Can you add many integers to a list with cons?
Yes, that's what we just saw, right?
For example, 1, 2, 3.
At the front, you mean?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, cons, nil, like that?
Yeah.
No. Doesn't work. You can't even parse it. Says, I have no idea what you're talking about. Yes? If you write 1 cons 2, no. The first thing must be an element of a list, the second thing must be a list, and 2 isn't a list, so it doesn't like it. There are two kinds of people in the world. People say, let's say the world is divided into two kinds of people and people that do not. Right? We're all used to the idea of breaking things into different cases. Right? I have enough money to buy the thing, or I don't have enough money to buy the thing. Breaking things into cases is one of the essential constructs in computing. And this is your first example. Is the list empty? Is the list not empty? Every list will fall into one of those two categories. Now that requires a bit of mind-bending thought. Because almost every list is non-empty. And every list that's interesting is non-empty, right? The empty list is the dullest list you can think of. But without the empty list to use as a base case, you could never form any lists. So the empty case is absolutely essential. So if you can break things into two, even if one of those two cases seems very trivial and one that doesn't arise very often, then you can build any of the infinite number of different lists. Right? Just using cons and nil, I can build any list at all, right? And some lists are very long, right? They're lists of hundreds of thousands of elements or millions of elements. If I tried to make a list of everybody on the planet, which I could do just using cons and nil, it would have 7 billion odd elements in it. I can make that up just using cons and nil. Without nil, I couldn't do it, because I'd never be able to form a list to put at the end of cons. So the base case is absolutely essential. So 1, 2, 3 is list 1, cons 2, cons 3, cons nil. Similarly, list, as a string, you remember, is just a list of characters, and so I could formulate it this way, L cons d'onto, and so on. So every list is either the empty list, null, written with like that, or it's constructed, written x cons x's, and since it's not empty, it always has a first element, which we call the head, and then it always has a tail, which will itself be a list. Right, so you can tell from this that a list is a very strange beast. It has a head and a tail and nothing else. And the tail is often very long indeed, and of course the tail is another list. So if you tried to actually visualize that, it would look very weird indeed, right? So I set the class the challenge last year of visualizing what should a list look like, right? It's this beast that has a head and a tail, and the tail is itself a beast which has a head and a tail, and so on, until you reach one of your empty lists, which is nothing at all. So I actually got back some entries. You can find them on my blog. But I welcome entries from this class. Give me your picture of what you think a list should look like as a creature. Right? Just make blindingly clear how counterintuitive the notation we chose for lists were when we said, well, list has a head and a tail. That actually improved slightly on Lisp, where it was said that a list had a car and a cutter. So-called because car stood for contents of address register, and cutter stood for contents of decrement register. So the things in Lisp were actually named after the hardware registers available on a particular kind of computer. So we've gotten beyond that, but now we have things that have a head and tail and nothing else. Okay, so let's see how this works, right? If you take the list 1, 2, 3, let's be dumb. Okay, I want you all to practice being as dumb as a computer. Okay, is this the empty list? No. What's the head of this list? 1. What's the tail of the list? The list 2, 3. Let's look at the list 2, 3 then. Is that empty? No. What's the head of that list? What's the tail? I knew it. I knew it. You all said 3. It's not 3. What is it? The list containing 3. That's not 3. It's the list containing 3. Here it is. The tail of 2, 3 is the list containing 3. It's a list. Is it the empty list? No. What's its head? 3. There it is. What's its tail? The empty list. Aha. Is the empty list empty? Okay. So those are the basic questions you can ask about any list, and that way you can extract all the components of the list, just using null, head, and tail. That's all you need to know. Now in Haskell, we have an even better way of doing this, which is when we write a definition, we say there are two cases. Either the list is empty, or it's non-empty. If it's non-empty, it will have a head and a tail. I can write them separated by cons. This is called pattern matching. So the empty list here is a pattern, and x cons x's here is a pattern. A pattern is something built from constructors and variables and nothing else. So from this you've learned that the technical name for the empty list is that it is a constructor. For now, the only constructors you're going to see are cons and the empty list. But later, you get to learn how to define your own constructors. That's the second part of the course. But for now, we'll just do with these. So, I want to square every element in a list of integers. How am I going to do it? Break it into cases. Either the list is going to be empty or it's not, and I can answer the question for both cases. So, what is the result of squaring every element of the empty list? The empty list. What is the result of squaring every element in the list x cons x's? Of course, we can read it off here. It will itself be a non-empty list. To get the head of the list, I multiply x by x. And to get the tail of the list, I square every element in the tail. Any questions about that? Yes?
Have we defined X's as a list before?
Have we defined X's as a list? So it, when it pattern matches, I'll show you how this works in a minute. If I applied it to the list 1, 2, 3, X would be 1, the head of the list, and X's would be the list 2, 3, the tail of the list. So right, you want to make sure X and X's are well defined, and they will be. Good question. Yes? So square rect takes one argument, which is the list of integers. Right? Here it's the empty list. Here it's one list whose head is x and whose tail is x's. So this has just one argument, and we're calling it with just one argument.
Why don't we write just x's and
why couldn't we just write x's and have it magically know to square every element? Oh, you want to write square a different way. Let's see if I've got it written. Yes. You want to write it this way. Right? Square of W's. If W's is empty, then the empty list. Otherwise, let X be the head and X's be the tail, and then do X times X, and then square the tail. Was this what you had in mind? Right. So you can do that. If you look at the two of these, I think that one's a lot prettier and easier to read. So I recommend you do it that way. But you can do it that way if you want. Of course, you could also not use the lets, but just say head of W's times head of W's cons square con of open parenthesis tail of W's close parenthesis. You could do that too. Yes?
So is it, it's not stepping through the list one at a time then and squaring each element as it goes? Is it doing it all at the same time?
Right, so you want to see me trace through what it actually does.
Yeah.
I will do so. So let's trace through. So what happens if you do squares rec of the list 1, 2, 3? Well, the first thing we should remember is that when we write 1, 2, 3, it's really an abbreviation for this. Inside the computer, it will be stored in this way, as 1 cons 2 cons 3 cons nil. Okay, are you ready? Let's get stupid! Squares rec of this list here, let's see. I need to use this equation or this equation. If it's empty, I use this equation. Is it empty? No. Okay, it must be non-empty. So x will be the thing in front of the cons, that'll be 1. And x's will be the thing after, that'll be the list 2, 3. X is 1, X's is the list 2, 3. Now I just copy this out, always replacing X by 1 and X's by the list 2, 3. Now I do it again. What squares rec of 2 cons on to 3 cons on to nil? Let's see. Is 2 cons on to 3 cons on to nil empty? No. So it must be non-empty. And x will be the head, which is 2, and x's will be the tail, which is 3 cons nil. So now I copy it out with x replaced by 2 this time, and x's replaced by 3 cons nil. So now I'm done. Oh, no, I'm not done. I need to know what squares rec of 3 cons nil is. Let's see. I can use these definitions. Is 3 cons nil empty? No. So it must be non-empty. So x will be the head, which is 3, and x's will be the tail, which is the empty list. That's a list. That's okay. And now I'll copy everything out. With x times x, that becomes 3 times 3, and squares rec of x's becomes squares rec of the empty list. So now I'm all done, except I need to know what squares rec of the empty list is. Let's see. Is the empty list empty? Oh, it is. I finally get to use this equation. Squares rec of the empty list is the empty list. Okay. No more functions to apply. Oops, I need to know what 1 times 1 and 2 times 2 and 3 times 3 are. That's 1 and 4 and 9. And that's a list. Its head is 1 and its tail is list 4, 9. And I can actually write it abbreviated this way. So I think I'll print that out on my terminal because it's shorter. All done. No magic, only stupidity. Any questions about that? Yes?
Does it matter to put the empty list equation below the other equation?
Does the order of the equations matter? No, you can write them in either order. Any other questions? Yes?
Is there a way to count the iterations that go through, like only to apply to the first two elements, if you have 3 elements in this?
Right. Let's say you want to do something like extract the first 3 elements of a list. How would you do that using recursion?
Basically, I mean, this is, like, in an imperative language, this would be a loop, right? You would do this with a loop. Basically, for every element in the list, you do it once.
Right. In strange old-fashioned languages like Java, you would use a loop. That is correct.
And in a loop, you count, like, OK, I've done this once, I've done it twice, I've done it 30 times. Is there a way to do that in Haskell?
Yes. So there's a way of finding out which element of the list you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And we'll cover the details of how that works next week. Or you can work it out for yourself. Well, look ahead in the book a page or two. Look at zip. Now, there's one question remarkably nobody has asked me. Wait a minute. I'm trying to define this function square rec, and what I've defined it in and when I give this definition, I've said, well, square rec can be defined in terms of square rec. So I'm defining something in terms of itself. It's a circular definition. Why is that okay?
Because you have the first expression of the empty list. So you have an answer.
Okay, so you've given the answer, which is very good. But notice that normally, right, you're not allowed to define something in terms of itself. Right? Right? If in high school you started to write a function in math and you said, well, f of x is equal to f of x plus 1, right, the teacher would come around and slap your wrist. Right, you're not supposed to do that. But here we do that. And furthermore, it is this recursion which is the secret to being able to define anything that could be defined by a computer. It's this that lets you define the infinite number of different possible functions. So recursion is a very powerful technique. Why is it okay? Well, somebody pointed it out. It's because square rec of a list of length n is defined in terms of square rec of a list of length n minus 1 as long as n is greater than 0. So the length of the list is always getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and eventually it will reach 0, and then it's defined using the base case, which is not defined in terms of the function itself. So you always reduce square rec of a list to square rec of a smaller list, and it gets smaller and smaller and smaller until you hit the base case. If you left the base case out, it would end up being undefined on the base case. So the base case is essential to making this a function that is everywhere defined. Without the base case, you'd end up reducing to something that was undefined. So the base case is crucial. The other thing that is crucial is that the non-base case, the function on the list, is defined in terms of the function on a smaller list. For the time being, the smaller list will always be the tail. But in general, it could be anything that's smaller. So that's why this works. Okay, any questions about that? Yes?
Does the empty list have a head or head and tail?
Does the empty list have a head and tail? No. That's why we always ask first, is the list the empty list? Only if it's non-empty does it have a head and tail. Very good question. Okay. And then finally, of course, having done that, right, we now know two different ways to define squares. We could write a quick check property, and we could check, and that would indeed pass 100 tests. You might also want to ask, could I prove that these are the same? And yes, you can, and we'll talk about that later. Okay, so that's square, right? The other thing, important thing we learned about is comprehensions with guards. So how would you implement a guard? Very similar, except now instead of just asking one question, we're going to ask two. Right? If we wanted to form the list of all odd elements, so remember that with a comprehension, you would just say odd of x's is the list of all x such that x is drawn from x's and odd of x holds. So let's try to work out, using recursion, what odds would be. We'll break it into two cases. Is the list empty or non-empty? And if it's empty, what are all the odd elements in the empty list? The empty list. If it's non-empty, there's one more question to ask. Is x odd or otherwise? So the order in which these are written matters. It goes through them in order. Otherwise just means none of the previous things was true. So if odd of x is true, then we put x at the head of the list, and then we find all the odd things in the remaining list. If x is not odd, we leave it out of the list, and we only return all the odd things in the remaining list. Would you like to see a trace of that? Okay. Oh, before I do that, right, just for those of you who like using null head and tail instead, of course you can write it out using null head and tail instead, but it's a lot longer. Okay, let's get stupid. Odds rec of the list 1, 2, 3. I'll do this a little bit less stupidly. One can only take so much stupidity. So odds rec of 1, cons 2, cons 3, cons nil. Right? It's non-empty, so we match it up. X is going to be 1. X is going to be 2, cons 3, cons nil. And then we need to know which of these two works, so we just check. What is the value of odd x? It's true, so we're going to use this equation. So we copy things out again. X is 1, odd rec of x's is 2, cons 3, cons nil. Recurse. It matches again. X is 2. Right, that matches up. X's is 3, cons nil. And then we ask, is 2 odd? No. So this equation doesn't apply. The otherwise equation applies. Now we copy this out. So we don't use x at all. And we just write out odds rec followed by x's, and x's is 3 cons nil. So we get odds rec of 3 cons nil. The 2 has now vanished. Right? And you can see that it vanishes just here, right? X is 2. We're in the otherwise case, and x doesn't appear here. So that's what causes the 2 to vanish. We didn't copy it over. Then we look at this. Is this the empty list? No, it's non-empty. X is going to be the head, which is 3. X's is going to be the empty list. Again, we ask, is odd of x true? And in this case, it is. Odd of 3 is true. So we use this line. We copy out x and a cons, and then odds rec of x's, which in this case is the empty list. And now to work out odds rec of the empty list, we say, is it empty? Yes. So we copy out this equation. So we replace odds rec of the empty list by the empty list. And we get the list 1, cons 3, cons nil, which can also be written 1, 3. And just like before, the list, the recursive call, the list we pass it is the tail each time, so it's one shorter each time. And so it ends up being well defined. Well, now we could also do something like summing up a list. Okay. So how do you find the sum of a list? This is something we couldn't do with comprehensions, remember. I just said use the sum function when you're done. But now we can actually define the sum function. So summing up a list is pretty easy. Except you need to know one important thing, right? What is the sum of the empty list? 0. Well, you can read it off the screen. Okay. Why do we pick 0? 42 is an integer. Why don't I pick 42? I really like the number 42. I think the sum of the empty list should be 42.
Oh, 0 corresponds to nil.
Yes? Hand up in the back. Brilliant. We pick 0 because it is the neutral element of addition. So you remember, I said every time you meet a function, you should ask, is it associative? Is it commutative? By the way, is plus associative?
Yeah.
Yes. Is it commutative?
Yeah.
Yes. So, right, it's associative. It's commutative, and it has a neutral element. What is 0 plus x? What is x plus 0? 0 is the neutral element for plus. This turns out to be crucial, right? What is the sum of the list 1, 2, 3? 6. You must pick the sum of empty list to be 0, or else the sum of the list 1, 2, 3 will not be 6. That's why we pick it to be 0. You pick it because it is the neutral element, also sometimes called the identity element. So now, I should finish reviewing the equations before I show you how this works. So the sum of the empty list is 0. To sum the list x with head x and tail x's, we'll recursively sum the tail, and we'll just take x and add it to it, and that'll give us the sum of everything in the list. So let's see how this works. To sum 1, 2, 3, right, it's really this list here. It's non-empty, its head is x, its tail is the list 2, 3. So we copy this out, x is 1, x is the list 2, 3, so we get 1 plus sum of the list 2, 3. To work out sum of the list 2, 3, the list 2, 3 is non-empty, it has head x, tail the list 3. We copy this out again, so we get 2 plus sum of the list 3. The list 3 is non-empty. It has head x, it has tail the empty list, so we copy it out again, 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus sum of the empty list. The empty list is empty, so we copy this out and we get 0, so we get 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 0, which is 6. Do you see why it's important that 0 be the neutral element? It's so that 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 0 is the same as 1 plus 2 plus 3. If 0 wasn't neutral, that would not be the case. If I pick this line to be 42, what answer would this have given instead of 6? 48. Okay, so it's very important to pick 0. If I'm doing product, well, I'm not going to show you that for a moment. You might see it quickly. If I do product, plus will instead become times. What will I use for the base case? 1, not 0. 1. Why 1? Because 1 is the identity for multiplication. Or the neutral element. Okay, so now you know 3 things to ask any binary operator you meet. Hello, I'm so pleased to meet you. Are you associative? Are you commutative? You wouldn't happen to have a neutral element, would you? Okay, those are the 3 things you ask when you meet a binary operator. Not true for all of them. Like append, we just saw append. Okay, is append associative? Yes, x append y append z is the same. We'll just do one. Right, append is associative, because if I do 1, 2, plus plus 3, 4, I hate this. Go on. What do you want me to do? This is GNU Emacs, yes. I'm giving you a hard time, yes. Go away. All right, I won't show you an example. But indeed, right, if you take the list 1, 2, and the list 3, 4, 5, that gives you the list 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Append it to the list 6, 7, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If you take 3, 4, 5, and 6, 7, you get 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Append 1, 2 to the front, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So this is associative. Is it commutative? No. 1, 2, append 3, 4 is 1, 2, 3, 4. 3, 4, append 1, 2 is 3, 4, 1, 2, not the same thing. Does it have a neutral element? What is it? The empty list. If you append the empty list to the front of any list, you get that list. If you append the empty list to the end, you get that list. We'll see lots of other examples. Okay. So there's how you do product. Right? The product of the empty list is 1, is times, and this works out just the same way, except now we get 1 times 2 times 3 times 1, which is just what you need to get the product of everything in that list. If we used 0, what would we have gotten? 0. The product of any list whatsoever would be 0. Right? So there's a big difference between using 0 and using 1. This seems really obvious, right? I cannot tell you the number of times I've seen people look at a problem like this and say, oh, well, it's empty, it must be 0. Not always. It's the identity, it's the neutral element. It's not always 0. Right? I've seen researchers with PhDs get that one wrong. Okay? You now know more than those people. Pay attention to the neutral elements. Okay. And then we can put it all together, and using the techniques we've learned, if we want to find the sum of the square of the odd elements in a list, of course it would be, if it's the empty list, it'll be 0. If it's non-empty, check. If it's odd, find its square and add it into the sum of the squares of the odd elements in the tail. And otherwise, it'll just be the square of the the sum of the square of the odd elements in the tail. And we can go through and do that in detail, but I won't. And we could run quick check on it, but I don't even have that in my slides for some reason. So that's the last slide. You now all understand the most powerful technique in all of computing, recursion. Anybody want to treat me with a last question? Yes.